You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
And we welcome you to another day. It is Tuesday, another busy one, and there is a lot going on already today. And just wait, there's going to be quite a bit more before we perhaps go off the air with the NCAA Board of Governors meeting today and possibly making at least some recommendations. It's hard to guess really what else that is going to mean. But let's get to some of the news of the day here. And there is quite a bit going on as conferences are making decisions, SEC making decisions. So let's talk about it. The Big 12 has approved scheduling model that includes 9 conference games and 1 non-conference game. That's a big deal. And what's so remarkable about this is that and we'll show you and talk about it in a minute, that of the Power 5 conferences, they're all going at it a different way. The ACC will play a 10+1. They start the week of September 7th. The Big 12 could start as early as the 29th of August. So several teams have games on week 0. The Big 10 is not yet announcing. Originally, it was going to be today. They may be waiting. The Pac-12 and the SEC on September 26th. The Sun Belt announced they'll play 12 games and start on the 29th. So have you ever seen anything like this where the first game of the college football season will be, in theory, August 29th, and then you will have games staggered until September 26th? So a lot of people wondering, was the SEC wise to go slowly? Well, they'll be sitting back and watching as everyone else, or almost everyone else, attempts to get going, and they'll have plenty of time to go to school. And they've also made a lot of decisions today about when schools can practice. It was expected that this week was going to be the first practice week, but the SEC, according to reports I might add, and Sports Illustrated, is now going to pause that. So quite a bit going on. Meanwhile, another one of the best players in the country has decided to opt out. Remember last week it was Caleb Farby of Virginia Tech. Today, it is Rashad Bateman, a likely first-round pick. And what will more players do this? This is a very big and interesting move here that some of the best players in the country are saying, you know what, I'm just going to take my chances and work with a trainer and get ready for the NFL. So we're seeing NFL players opt out tomorrow. I think Thursday is the deadline day, and a number of major players, over 45 NFL players, have already opted out. College players obviously are doing the same thing. Meanwhile, Kadarius Toney and Northwestern has stopped workouts. We reported this yesterday, and we don't know how many players have been testing positive, but it was enough for yet another Big Ten school, to say, you know what, we're going to at least pause for a couple of days while we try to figure all of this out. Meanwhile, the Pac-12 continues to gain a lot of conversation around the country. Larry Scott, the commissioner of the Pac-12, in a statement yesterday saying that he would be willing to meet. What else could he do? I mean, they've asked for half of his salary. They've asked for a lot of demands, and we'll talk a lot about that today on the program. So that's where we are. We're 2 days into this week, and it has already been some of the busiest couple of days of the college football season, and we're still, depending on your favorite conference, between 3 weeks and 7 weeks away from beginning. So that's where we are. We'll share We'll share with you the guest list. And we talked to a number of people today that we hope will try to make some of this more interesting, including Rod Gilmore right out of the chute. Rod Gilmore played football on the West Coast. He's now an ESPN commentator. Rick Hurl will join us. Chuck Carlton from the Dallas Morning News on why the Big 12 decided to do what it did. So we'll also take your phone calls at 855-242-7285. And again, just a reiteration of how confusing everything is. We will try to watch it, try to figure out what's going on, and there's not much else we can do. So the SEC has updated its practice schedule. This is according to reports, and it is what they're really doing here is essentially giving more time to get the practice in case there are any interruptions. 25 practices over 6 weeks starting August 17th until the opening day. We tried to tell you it was not going to be normal, and it's not. So let's get to your phone calls. At 855-242-7285. That's 855-242-7285. Let's begin with Brian, who starts us off in Florida. Brian, welcome to the program, and good afternoon.
Thank you, Paul. How are you?
I am well. Thank you.
Listen, before I say why I called, I wanted to just give you some props. I know it's not the easiest sitting up there 5 days a week and trying to navigate things, especially with the speed in which new developments come about on the news side and the sports side and where they intersect. So just keep on doing the best you can. I'm with you. I understand how it is. I also understand how hard it is to sometimes avoid getting in the weeds on some of these calls. But you seem to do a decent job.
Well, let me say
that.
This, Brian, before we get going. And thank you for saying that, but we're going through something as a group of college football fans here, and that's how I see the show, that is difficult. And we had a caller yesterday, and somebody I really have always enjoyed chatting with, and he said, I just get so depressed listening to this. And that is not our goal, but we also, in good conscience, can't ignore what is going on around us. Every day there is something new to share. We try to get away from it like we did yesterday. Remember, Tim Brando was on an hour. It was like going to a bar, having a few beers, and forgetting our troubles. But you begin the program today, and it's not what we thought it was going to be yesterday. So I appreciate your thoughts. I appreciate everyone who yearns for the days when on August 3rd we would be deep in the weeds of college football, but we're still not there yet.
Yeah, well, to put things in perspective, a year ago, the biggest concern I had was trying to figure out how to park at the Citrus Bowl for the Miami Gator game.
Exactly. Exactly.
Hey, quick point here, the reason I called. A lot of things are going to be different that we haven't really thought about yet. History is full of events, major cataclysmic events that have unintended consequences, and some of that is good. New businesses spring up, renewal, etc. For instance, and I'll make my point quick, 2 years from now, what percentage of the population is going to be working from home permanently because corporate America figured they don't need 20-story office buildings and all 20 floors of it? You know, that's just one thing. How that relates to sports, and I'll hang up. Do you feel that we may be at the beginning of some type of new voice for college athletes where there's strength in numbers and they're just not going to put up with certain things, whether we think it's fair or not? And I'll hang up, and thank you.
Yeah,
Paul.
Thank you. I do think so. I'm not convinced, Brian, thank you for your call. I'm not convinced that this particular moment is the one that will get everyone over the finish line, but it does feel like the beginning of a movement that has been lurking out there for a very long time. And it's just, you know, if you study history, why do certain things happen? Why do events occur? There are usually tipping points that push things over the top. Thank you for the call, though. Let's continue. And Pat is up next in Georgia. Pat, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. Thanks. Tim Brando was remarkably refreshing yesterday. I really enjoyed it. And I'll ask you a question that I would have liked to have asked him. The SEC is pushing it back. They're buying more time. They want to see what happens to other conferences that open up. But between now and September the 26th, what do the presidents and chancellors absolutely, positively have to get right in order to open the season on the 26th?
Well, it's a good question, Pat. And I think what they really want to see, in addition to all the ancillary things like Major League Baseball, like the NFL, is they want to see what their own campuses look like. Can they manage students moving into dorms? Can they manage students being students and not having a lot of problems? And if they can, then I think they'll feel really comfortable. It's pretty obvious they have not been able to manage players having outbreaks. And you know, what we don't know is pretty amazing right now, Pat. And I sense that I have a handle on it unofficially, but I think you wouldn't be surprised because you watch this show every day. But I believe even in the SEC, if every school was transparent and gave out the number of players that have been infected or tested positive for COVID-19 since they arrived back 2 months ago, it would blow everyone away. It really would. I believe some of the numbers are in the 30s, 40s, and maybe 50s. And that has to concern people. And not one SEC school has shut down, by the way. And you know, really outside of the Big Ten, not many other schools have either, isolated schools. They're watching that. They're watching to see what happens. How do players react? So far, it's been really good. So good that a coach at NC State today pretty much said he's more concerned about heat, stroke, and injuries than he is about an illness that may affect his players for 3 to 5 days. That was Dave Doran, and he definitely wins the Moron of the Day award for saying that. But
wow.
That's where we are, and I think that's what they're going to be watching.
Okay, I have one follow-up question. Do you think that the SEC commissioner may unilaterally decide that there are no fans in the stands, there will be no season tickets issued for the sole sake of the sanity and of the 14 athletic department ticket office managers and not wanting them to consider committing suicide?
I don't know if that's what he's going to do or not.
Hello?
I suspect that the conference would probably prefer that individual schools make judgments based on their own environment. Thanks for the call. We are taking a break. Much more to come as we continue here on a Tuesday afternoon.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we welcome you back here on a Tuesday afternoon, and Philip is up next. Philip, good afternoon, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Paul. Good to be on the show again.
I want
to talk to you about these season ticket holders. You know, a lot of these season ticket holders are big donors to some of these universities and football programs and to the stadiums themselves. And if they don't allow fans, you know, or season ticket holders to purchase tickets or be in the stands, do you think this is going to have an adverse effect that some of them will probably start pulling their donations that have a big impact on these schools?
I mean, it's possible, but I mean, most people, Philip, whether you're Texas A&M, TCU, Alabama, Auburn, Georgia, you are a fan of that school, and you will probably be asked, and you may even agree to support the school, whether they're fans or not. So I think a one-off is not going to dramatically impact the upper echelon. It may hurt a middle of the pack program that depends heavily on season ticket sales. But I've read various comments from athletic directors, and as of right now, they're still being as optimistic as they can because they want people to buy seats. I'm not talking about it at the upper echelon, but if you're in the middle of the pack, you want people to buy season tickets, and then you're hoping that once they buy them, they'll let you have the money.
Yes, and do you think that it's going to be a conference-wide decision to allow how many fans are in the stands, or are they going to leave it up to each individual school?
No, I think ultimately it's going to be like everything else in the country. It's going to be guided by where you are and what those guidelines of the state are. If you're in Montana, you could probably put 25 to 30,000 people in the stands based on the issues that you're currently having. If you're in Florida right now, it may be a completely or Texas or Arizona, maybe it's a completely different story. So I would be surprised if conferences issue those. I think the one thing you're going to hear from almost everyone is they are not going to want students gathering in large numbers like normal at any big time college atmosphere where you have. I've been to games. You've been to games probably where there are 30,000-40,000 right. people hanging around doing nothing during the game.
Right. Well, thanks for your input, Paul. Appreciate
Thank you
letting me on the show.
Happy to have you on. Let's check in with Charles, who is in Carolina. Excuse me, Charles. Go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. Love you so, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Let me ask you two questions. Back in the late 70s and early 80s, Clemson and Georgia played some pretty good football, and it always came down to a field goal, and Clemson's kicker was David Treadwell, and the Georgia kicker's first name, I think, was Kevin. Can you tell me who that was?
I sure can. Kevin Butler.
Okay, well, Treadwell went on to play with the Denver Broncos. Who did Butler play with?
I had lunch with him a couple of years ago, and I think he played for the Bears. I could be off on that, but I remember Kevin came to town with some people, and he holds the record, I believe. It may have been in the Clemson game. I think he kicked a 62-yard field goal to win the game.
He did. Let me ask you one more question, change subjects. ESPN's been showing some old Eagles concerts. And the one I saw was after Don Henley had passed away.
Right.
And singing some of his songs was country singer Vince Gill.
Right.
Is he touring with the band now?
I think he is. Vince Gill, I'm pretty sure he started in, remember the group Pure Prairie League? They did Amy?
Yeah.
I think he was an original member or in that group early on, and then he veered off into country. But I can't. I've read something about it. He has a relationship with the Eagles, and I saw that concert, and not live, but I saw it on television. I've seen a few other. He's got an amazing voice.
Oh, he's great. He's married to the Christian singer Amy Grant.
Amy Grant, yeah, he sure is.
Well, let me ask
she's
one
quite
more,
a singer,
one,
too.
One more thing is the Eagles have been advertising a 2021 tour, Hotel California. Have you heard about where they're going to be playing anywhere close?
Yeah, and by the way, let me jump in because I know Don Henley's a big fan of this show, and I don't want him to be driving around California thinking that he died. Glenn Frey is the member of the Eagles who died.
Glenn Frey, I am so sorry.
I mean, Don Henley is going to call me after the show and ask me what in the world I'm doing.
I am so sorry.
By the way, we did a show, and I'm not going to mention the football player, but a couple of years ago, somebody called in and asked me about a football player. And I said, yeah, he was a great guy, one of the best players of all time. And, of course, he died a couple of years ago. And he was still alive listening.
Oh, well, thanks for the information, my friend.
Thank you. And we're going to celebrate Don Henley the rest of the day because he's still among us and not only one of the great songwriters of all time, but one of the great band members. I mean, Don Henley, in his solo career, is a Hall of Famer. We'll take a break. More to come
all
as
right.
we continue here
on a
Tuesday afternoon.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Welcome back here on the program. Great to have everyone here, and I'm really looking forward to our next guest. Rod Gilmore, not only a great broadcaster at ESPN for many, many years, but he has the distinction of having 2 degrees from what was once the Pac-8 from Stanford and Cal Berkeley, where he has a law degree. He has practiced law in the Bay Area as well as being a commentator. And Rod, it's wonderful to have you, and it's been way, way too long since we've talked to everyone or seen anyone, but we hope you're doing as well as anyone can possibly do over these last 5 months. Good afternoon.
Good to catch up with you, Paul. It's been far too long. It's been a crazy time, and I was hoping for some normalcy by this time of the year, but it's not here, and quite honestly, I'm not sure when I'm going to see you face to face.
Yeah, no, I've literally given up on ever seeing anyone again face to face, but as long as we can communicate somehow, Rod, and maybe even have some football, and that's where I want to start before we get to some of the issues that are emanating around the country. You've watched this like we all have. We've all had good days and bad days in relation to seeing college football this year. How are we doing right now? You think we're inching closer?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm more worried today than I was yesterday. It just seems to fluctuate on a daily basis. A couple of weeks ago, I thought things were getting better. It was good to hear the plans from the conferences, buying some time. But the events of the last few days are really unsettling when you hear about a player at Indiana who has COVID-19 and winds up in the hospital. Rutgers shuts down, Northwestern shuts down. And the other thing that's troubling is you watch Major League Baseball and the NFL, and it seems like it's really difficult for those folks to be able to operate in this environment. Just about the NBA is the only one that is having some success with it, but to do that, a bubble, quarantine, daily testing, and spend hundreds of millions of dollars, that sort of model is beyond what college football can do. So, yeah, I'm more worried today than I was a couple of weeks ago, and add to the mix now that the players have found their voice and they're weighing in with their concerns, which is perfectly legitimate, and that was something that the conferences didn't have to consider a couple of weeks ago.
And Rod, I want to land there because you know a lot of these players. You've done their games. You've seen them. You've gone to these schools. And I think when you live in the South, like I have most of my, if not all of my life, you don't really have the kind of perspective that maybe you do, spending most of your time on the West Coast. Can you go dive deeper into that? Because we had a lot of reaction yesterday, as you can imagine. They don't understand. People don't understand. College football fans don't understand. What are these players looking for? What are they trying to accomplish?
Well, I think you have to step back and recognize that we are in the midst of a sea change in college football. And the things that have been concerning players just didn't crop up this year. I mean, if you think back, you know, remember 2015 when Missouri boycotted a game over racial incidents on campus. And you just start adding up the things that have been on their minds and have come forward, the lawsuits that have been out there for the right to use name, image, and likeness and to share in things. The transfer issues where coaches were issuing 40, 50 schools on a list that said players couldn't transfer to those places. Players who were complaining of demeaning language from assistant coaches. All these things have been percolating for quite a while. And then we have 2020, where we have this, these incredible triggering events, the George Floyd killing on video for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. You have other incidents. Social justice, systemic racism become a very, very personal thing to a lot of players, and they're involved with those movements. And those have carried on to the college campuses and carried on to their teams. And so they feel invested. This is a part of things. And when you look at the Pac-12 players and their manifesto or their list of demands, whatever you want to call it, they included in there the reference to money and sharing the revenue. But from talking to players the past few days, it seems clear their focus was really on health and safety, getting the testing right because they don't feel comfortable, and two, being able to make an impact socially and impact systemic racism. And for whatever reason, they somehow didn't realize that saying that they wanted 50% of the revenues would get the headlines, but that's the headlines. So there's a lot going on. There's a lot to unpack. I think we're going to see in the next several days, we'll hear more from, I think, SEC players, whether they formally organize or not to present something. I think we'll hear that out of Big Ten players, probably ACC players. But I think their focus will be much more on their concern about playing in a pandemic environment when they see that the professional leagues are suffering and when they see that during the summer we've had some 6,300 cases with 270 schools involved and 15 or 16 that have shut down.
And Rod, that's what we know about. And everyone has heard the numbers, and we'll probably never get an accurate
Good
reading,
point.
But you and I both know the numbers are very high out there.
That's right.
I'm curious because, you know, people like us don't have to proclaim that we want to see college football. I think that's obvious. But every time you have one of these conversations, a lot of folks don't understand why we just can't have a season like normal. And as we get closer, I'm really interested in whether you think that it's even possible to pull this thing off. I know what the schedules are, and that's what ADs and commissioners have to do. They can't sit around all summer and play golf and go water skiing. They have to come up with a plan, and they have a plan now, but is it workable?
Well, let me start where I am, which is in California. And right now, the California schools, Stanford, California, USC, UCLA, they could not start practice. The governor's criteria and mandates would not allow them to start fall practice. So there are local and state criteria that have to be met. I can't say that for every state across the country, but there are a lot of hot spots. This pandemic now is worse than what it was a few months ago. And the optics for a lot of presidents and members of board of trustees, and I've talked to some of them, they are indeed worried about what it looks like if you don't have students on campus, but you have players on campus and you ask them to go play and they're getting sick and you have to start and stop the season. It's not a very good look. And you're going to get hit with the whole notion that you're pushing this merely for financial reasons at the expense of players who are taking the health risk. And that's what the players are pushing back on right now. I think what we're going to see over the next week or so is a heavy push by players to say, look, if you can't test us the way that you're testing pro players with the NBA, we should be tested every day or every other day. It's too risky for us, and we don't want to take that chance. And, you know, we're seeing some key players now opt out and say, it's just not worth it for me to take this risk. So I am concerned that as we get closer to this, there may not be enough of a resolution. We may get a start. We may get teams that push ahead to open the season. But can we get through the season? I'm not optimistic right now at this moment.
And Rod, we put up a graphic a minute ago of as it stands today, and nobody can say anything in concrete, but you have some schools, as you well know, that are planning on starting August 29th. That's around the corner. You have others like the Pac-12 and the SEC and maybe more who are not planning on a starting to September 26th. I mean, we are about to swim into the most discombobulated month in college football history, and any games would be good, but it you know, what does it say about the disconnect of this sport?
Well, it's pretty clear that we don't have top-down leadership, and we've seen things sort of devolve to every conference kind of on its own. Could it be that we would have a conference go forward while one or two other conferences choose not to? That would not surprise me. And there's another X factor out there, Paul, and I know you're aware of this. There's a parents group that is headed by Chris Hinton, who played at Northwestern and offensive lineman, played a number of years in the NFL. And he's got about 2,000 parents in his group, and they have consistently been saying to coaches and to the media that they're concerned about their player, their sons, being put in this environment. And they haven't fully weighed in. What I've been hearing is that some are, you know, contemplating telling their sons, we're not letting you go play. We're not going to put you in that environment. So we are in this period right now where there's a lot of uncertainty. No one really knows when things are going to begin, who's going to show up for it. So, there's a lot happening, and we don't have that top-down leadership, and we don't have that assurance for players that they will be safe and that they don't have to worry about short-term or long-term consequences. And that's one of the things that the Pac-12 players put in their manifesto, is that they want some assurance that they will get extended medical coverage because we don't know the extent of COVID-19. And if they have issues that show up later, they want to be covered for that.
Rod Gilmore with the unsettling air over the college football season. Rod, most important, glad to hear from you. Hope you stay well, and look forward to whether it's this year, next, or sometime in our lifetime to see you again. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Paul. And I've got my fingers crossed that we'll catch up soon and that we will have a college football season.
Let's hope. Thanks, Rod. Great to have you on. Rod Gilmore, one of the most thoughtful commentators in the industry. Great player as well. Law degree from Berkeley. We are taking a break, and your phone calls are around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
And we welcome you back, and Shannon is up next in Georgia. Shannon, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hey, Paul, I enjoyed the Rod Gilmore interview there. It was good to hear some familiar college football voices. You know, I think just brings a little comfort just hearing those voices you're so used to listening to on Saturday afternoons. I wanted to call yesterday, Paul. I got a little ticked off yesterday listening to the show. A gentleman called in from California, I guess, after I'd called in and was complaining about the number of calls that come in from white Southern males that sound like Foghorn Leghorn.
Yeah, I remember that.
I'm wondering, Paul, does that joker realize that this show is broadcast on the SEC network, which is Southeastern Conference, and your show started in Birmingham, didn't it, on the air, on the radio?
It sure did, absolutely.
I would venture to say, and tell me if I'm wrong, that your demographic is pretty saturated in the southeastern United States. Is that pretty safe to say?
Yeah, I think if you drew up a geographical map of the largest concentration of listeners to this program, it would be pretty obvious where they are.
Yeah, so I mean, what kind of mental midget finds it hard to understand that most of your callers come in from that area? I'm just a little confused by that, Paul. I don't understand how you can be shocked that a majority of the callers that call in are white Southern males. But be that as it may, I wanted to get your response, Paul, to the Dan Le Batard situation with ESPN.
Okay, and I'm not just giving you a line. What is it? I haven't heard his show in so long. I really don't know.
Jonathan Isaac is, a big man for the Orlando Magic and the NBA, and he did not kneel the other day for the national anthem and cited his Christian beliefs and his spirituality as the reason why he did not kneel for the anthem. And I guess later on in the game, either that night or a night or two later, he blew his ACL. And Dan Le Batard put on Twitter a poll question, which he has since retracted, that said, hey, do you find it funny that the only guy that failed to kneel for the national anthem blew his knee out that night during the game?
Yeah, I want to correct myself. I did read something about that. Kneeling for the national anthem is a personal choice, and if you decide to do it, then that's what you decided to do. And if you decide to stand, it's the same choice. We used to not think in those terms, but we do now. That's a pretty crass thing to do. What do you expect? Do you really expect anything else from Le Batard?
Well, let me tie this into the complaint I made earlier about the caller from California complaining about the white Southern male. I've heard that phrasing stated on your show a couple times recently, Paul, to be quite honest, and it seems to be a recurring trend that people call in and complain about that. And in response to that, I see statements like Le Batard and then Wojnarowski got into quite a bit of trouble when he sent a little email to a senator from the Midwest in response to questions about the NBA's alliance.
Well, yeah, the senator from Missouri sent out something, and he just responded like you know he did. I would say he got into some trouble there.
So here's my question, Paul. I hear the comment that the guy who called in from California made yesterday. I see Le Batard in his anti-right-leaning poll and kind of the bashing on that guy for wanting to stand for the national anthem. Wojnarowski's approach to the senator from Missouri, is it just more of a left-leaning time at ESPN? Is that what we're seeing? Is there just an audience shift going on that those of us who have been SEC conference fans and Paul Feinbaum show fans just need to accept that this is the way things are going to be and that we're the problem, the right's the problem?
Well, I'll try to talk about this as honestly as I can, considering where I work, but I will, because I've always believed in being transparent. But the knock on ESPN has been that way for some time, Shannon, as I'm sure you know. And yeah. I think it's the company brought in new leadership to try to calm that down. And it did calm down until recently.
Well, I'm just going to say this, and I can only speak for myself, Paul, and I'm not trying to speak for anybody else. The comment from the guy in California yesterday, the comment that I heard about mask wearing in the South, and I heard a guy on your show say to you, and I'm sure you remember this, the problem with the coronavirus is Southern evangelical males not wearing masks.
Right.
Then you throw in Dan Le Batard attacking a man because he wanted to stand for the anthem, and you throw in Wojnarowski saying F you to a congressman who questions the NBA's association with China.
By the way, he was a United States senator.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm senator. And I'm beginning to become disenchanted with sports in general. I mean, I'm to the point now that after listening to Gilmore just a second ago, I don't think college football is going to happen. I really don't, Paul. And I would have never said this. You know better than I do and better than listeners do how many players are testing positive. And of those players that are testing positive, how many of them are really asymptomatic? But yeah, that really doesn't matter.
Shannon, let me pause. We have to go to a break. We'll continue this later. But, yeah, you raised some very good points there. We'll continue that. More guests to come. We hope you'll stick around.